Listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, Burnaby, BC.
This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
So persuasive, so addicting. TikTok, TikTok. Any time is no time, no mind at all. Tick, 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 tock.
Look around. How could so much madness dominate social media and politics? Oh boy, politics. Are people getting stupider? Well, that's right. At least half a dozen different brain-damaging trends are dumbing down the population. Heavy metals, toxic chemicals, COVID, wildfire smoke, an aging population, and climate stress all threaten intelligence. Now add TikTokification. We talk with a scientist about a new addiction capturing billions of humans. In current anti-science times, he appears only as Mr. White Orange. Tune in for a unique talk on social media, culture, and our brains. That's just a little clip from my intentionally mindless Eurodance hit, Toxify. You get the whole song at the end of this program and download it free at ecoshock.org. Okay, so let's get into this about the mind and the various impacts before we get to our guest. Just take the metal lead. A PNAS paper found, quote, "The average lead-linked loss in cognitive ability was 2.6 IQ points per person as of 2015. This amounted to a total loss of 824,097,690 IQ points, disproportionately endured by those born between 1951 and 1980. In our January 22nd EcoShock show, we talked with scientist Ari Feinberg from the Spanish National Research Council. We talked about global distribution of another heavy metal, mercury. Mercury also has neurotoxic effects and lowers IQ. Everybody's getting a dose of that. Oh yeah, and then there's the brain loss nobody wants to talk about. We're looking at IQ gone from the COVID virus. A story in the New York Times 2023 is headlined, "Can't Think, Can't Remember, More Americans Say They Are in a Cognitive Fog. Adults in their 20s, 30s, and 40s are driving the trend. Researchers point to long COVID as a major cause." That is by Francesca Paris. Here comes another. A study in the New England Journal of Medicine found people, quote, "who recovered from COVID symptoms had a cognitive deficit equivalent to 3 IQ points, compared with those who were never infected, while participants suffering from unresolved COVID symptoms lasting 12 weeks or more experienced a loss equivalent to 6 IQ points. Brain fog after COVID is well known. The world suffered a pandemic that is known to lower intelligence in millions of people." Another study in the New England Journal of Medicine, February 2024, found, quote, "A recent analysis of the U.S. current population survey showed that after the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, an additional 1 million U.S. residents of working age reported having serious difficulty remembering, concentrating, or making decisions than at any other time in the preceding 15 years. Whether these changes are attributable solely to long COVID is unclear, but that report represents a change in the cognitive health of U.S. residents from pre-pandemic levels," end quote. Other studies found a loss of 3 IQ points in people with lingering COVID symptoms, rising up to 6 points, as we said, in millions of people with long COVID, and even 9 points lower IQ for those who were hospitalized in intensive care. We already have stories of university professors unable to resume teaching after COVID and countless reports of people no longer in work due to COVID, the brain fog, People around you may not notice a loss of 3 IQ points. It's just a little bit less brain power. But if we lose 3 points to lead and 3 points to COVID and another 3 from mercury, well, that's 9 points less. Maybe then a person might lose their job for a poorer performance or find life somewhat harder to navigate. And from all these vectors, it's beginning to sound possible the average person could be, well, 12 points IQ dumber.
Actually, we are two laboratory mice who wish to be on your show as part of an intricate plan to take over the world.
And there is more. Don't forget the brain-deadening effects of smog. Even light smog from industry and traffic can lower IQ points of people living in it and downwind of it. Now picture months in New Delhi, India, where buildings are barely visible. A gray-black dust fills the air and everyone's lungs. Other gases and pollutants are held captive near the ground. From Lagos to Beijing, humans are losing intelligence due to air pollution. The science is in. Medical doctors know how it works. There is no mystery or debate about it left. Smog makes people sicker and stupider. From Columbia University, Dr. Francisca Pereira is a world leader in the study of the effects of smog and heat-related illness on babies in the womb and then later in life. She writes, quote, "Research has now linked prenatal as well as postnatal air pollution exposure to reduced IQ and other cognitive problems, developmental disorders such as ADHD and autism, depression and anxiety, and even structural changes in the brains of children. Research has also shown how climate-related displacement results in disruption of education and mental health problems such as post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety, and depression in children. These conditions often persist, affecting health and brain function in adulthood." End quote from Francisca Pereira. "We have not begun to realize so many insults to our brains. Scientists are finding more nanoparticles of plastics in the brain, plus forever chemicals known to be neurotoxins. This is a whole new field of medical research to come. But meanwhile, you and I are rats in the living laboratories for postmodern changes in the brain and our whole nervous system." Ah, but now add in the cumulative health impacts of climate-driven disasters, including cognitive loss and mental illness. For more on that, search out reports this year in The Lancet on climate and health, and in my interview with scientist Dan Mitchell in our February 2nd program. In December 2024, I also interviewed Clayton Aldern on his new book, The Weight of Nature, How a Changing Climate Changes Our Brains. Find a link in my show blog at ecoshock.org. You can listen to it or download it for free. We must include wildfire smoke in the climate-pushed bag, I think. Wildfire smoke is known to have multiple health effects, including an ability to reach the brain directly and impair neurological functions. Check out my December 24 interview with Dr. Joan Casey, environmental epidemiologist from the University of Washington, on that. Breathing wildfire smoke increases risks of dementia by 18%. The mental health effects of climate change is just a huge subject, and I'll have to cover it in more shows to come. Well, here's another factor. Most Western countries are now having more people with brains declining due to simple aging. It is natural and well known that as the brain ages, it loses some functionality. Older people may not be as bright as they were in their 20s. Most of the Western world is now experiencing a wave of aging people, with the baby boomers and the next generation having fewer children. In a population with higher numbers of seniors, the overall population would record a lower intelligence due to natural brain decline. There is more of this particular type of stupidity around, and sometimes they dominate positions of power and wealth. Add to that pile of assaults on the brain, experts and parents worry social media is the new force dumbing down millions of people. Some of these developments are too new for long-term studies or data. We suspect, but do not know. And that is where we begin today. Does TikTok make us passive with lazy brains? How about those fast YouTube videos or just scrolling through social media? Are we de-learning to the point of losing intelligence? Does that explain the wave of anti-science, hostility to medicine, and politics feeding on a yearning to go backward in time? Are we too dumb to self-govern? Too dumb to save ourselves from dictators and climate failure?
Where does my mind go? What replaces me? TikTok.
The great minds, Newton, Einstein, Nietzsche, Asimov, they all needed isolation and deep thought for the breakthroughs that define modern civilization. When everyone is connected to endless outside stimulation, where will new creation come from? Are short posts and videos served up by algorithms dumbing us down? Maybe machines are not becoming more like us. They train us to become more like them. Are we building idiocracy? Our next guest calls it TikTokification. He is an accomplished scientist recognized in his entirely different field. He prefers to remain anonymous at this point. I have looked into his expertise, and it is mind-boggling. Though safely out of America, for this discussion we use his net name when posting on Medium, which is The White Orange. From somewhere out there, Mr. White Orange, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi, Alex.
How would you introduce us to the phenomenon of TikTokification?
What I call TikTokification is really the reshaping of all our media, not just what we see on TikTok, into a more of a TikTok-style format. So this goes from the news, from other social medias, even we may argue the books, becoming more like TikTok. And this is like a twofold aspect, I would say. So on the one hand, we can see across the board things becoming shorter. So this is happening to books. You may also have experienced it with the news, or you know, some news nowadays are just like a simple headline even to YouTube. And then the other clear symptom of this phenomenon is what we have seen on Instagram, YouTube, is where all sorts of content is becoming these vertically scrollable videos that are so characteristic of TikTok. But because TikTok is the leading platform in terms of grabbing attention, all other platforms have had to adapt and adopt the same type of content. So what this is creating is that it's not just the content on TikTok that is becoming short and shallow, but also every other platform out there, every other form of media is becoming shorter and shallower as a result of this dominance of TikTok format.
All right, if I go out for a walk, not a lot happens. I don't expect any car accidents or a come on from sexy people. It is slow time. And back in the chair and looking at the screen, I open TikTok, and right away, there's more excitement in minutes than half a lifetime in slow world. Real life is just boring compared to continuous blasts of compressed attention. But why should we be bored some of the time?
Right. So I think that's an interesting point. I would already challenge that, you know, life is boring depending on your scale, right? I mean, maybe a heroin addict will not find real life stimulating either. The same way someone that is, you know, a heavy user of TikTok might not find going for a walk that's rewarding or stimulating, right? So I think it really depends on the scale, on what you're used to. So yeah, it's just boredom gives us this time and space for the brain to self-introspect and think about our place in life and, you know, whether we are content with what we're doing or whether we need to rethink or, you know, our current life. And if our brain is constantly, you know, if the attention is constantly put onto something, this could be even, you know, if you can think of this thought experiment, right, where someone has all of his or her working hours fixed on a movie, then the person will be incapable of generating new ideas or reflecting whether what they're doing with their time is worth. So boredom really gives us this space and time for the brain to introspect, to digest what we've gone through, you know, be it during the day or during our life, and basically give us the motivation to do the boring stuff, which is oftentimes the most rewarding stuff, right, which is maybe pursuing that degree or starting to learn a new language. If we are constantly entertained, we will never have the ambition or the motivation to go for these harder purposes in life, which I would argue is what ultimately brings joy, right? This type of goals that require certain effort over a prolonged period of time, but in the long run, it's what gives us satisfaction in our life.
These days, people work in warehouses, listening to podcasts. Young people have phones out all the time, interacting with friends over the phone and those right there at the table. Is it possible older people did not learn to multitask and young people did?
That's an interesting question. And I'm not a neuroscientist, so take this with a grain of salt. But, I can conceive that probably young people are somewhat better adapted at maybe what we would call multitasking. But I think it's very clear, if you look at the research, that we are most productive and most attentive, and even we drive more enjoyment and we learn better when we are concentrated with the task at hand. So I think multitasking is almost like a myth. We are better at doing single things and focusing deeply on them. And when we do that, it's when we get the most out of those tasks. So I think in general, the term multitasking is overblown, or it's not really an effective way of doing the type of things that require concentration and attention. So that, I can conceive that there might have an edge over old people, but I don't think there's such a thing as multitasking.
It's interesting you should say that, because I'm an old computer guy, and even when the first chips came out that claimed to multitask, in fact, they weren't. They were just moving from one task to the other very rapidly, but they could never do it all at the same time. All right.
That's
now,
true.
I'm thinking about people who are skimming through social media. Perhaps it makes our minds more shallow. And then does that add up to a more shallow culture? Maybe we've reached peak ideas and we're getting ready to stall out? Or an even darker thought, maybe a few people will generate new knowledge or art, but there isn't much public left with enough focused mind to receive it. Your thoughts?
Actually, coming back to this cheap idea that you mentioned, I think that's also very interesting, because in truth, that's what we may call multitasking even in humans, right? With swapping, I devote 30 seconds in one task and I devote 30 seconds in another one. And another thing that research is very clear on is that the moment we swap between one task to another one, there is something that they call, I think, residual attention, which is that your mind takes a while to completely switch, from whatever you were thinking to the next task. So even if we conceive multitasking as this quick swapping between tasks, then it's very clear that that's not an efficient way to work. If we agree that there is a, and that's the argument I make on what I wrote on Medium, is that there is a vast, or the vast majority of people nowadays are just devoting their attention to this, mindless scrolling. So the flip side of that is that, well, if you're a person that is capable of focusing deeply on a task at hand for long hours every day, it's very likely that you're going to succeed. So in other words, if this skill has become so rare that perhaps we're on a time that it's easier than ever to succeed, right? You just need to be able to focus, and that already is something, whereas maybe 100 years ago, that was a commonplace. The other thing, of course, is that, as I mentioned in the post as well, is that obviously, if you're writing, obviously when you create anything, be it a book or maybe a song, well, ideally you wouldn't need to think of an audience, right? People should do these things because they love them and because it gives them an intrinsic reward. But unfortunately, more and more nowadays, people, when creating something, have the audience as the, as the goal. So that means that obviously you have to sacrifice maybe quality or refinement or complexity just to adapt your message to this more shallow audience. So for sure, I think the content is being reshaped by the audience, and therefore that also affects creators, right? They need to think, okay, how am I going to deliver my message so that people can understand it? And that inevitably means dumbing it down. And then in terms of whether we've reached peak ideas, it's for sure reversible, but I think it's very worrying that we're letting these AI algorithms reign loose, and we might find ourselves, in terms of whether we've reached our peak intellect, right, as a civilization. The good news is that obviously, there's nothing permanent about what's going on. I do think that we are downtrending in a way. We're becoming more and more dumb. And I think anyone that has spent any amount of on the internet can testify for this. As I was mentioning earlier, you know, you read the news, or you need, I don't know, even what qualifies as news today, you know, this can be like Elon Musk tweeting whatever nonsense that has happened through his brain. How is that relevant? How is that part of the news, right? So even the type of content that is relevant nowadays is clearly less important, or, you know, more nonsensical than 50 years ago. But the good news is that there is nothing permanent, right? As we know, the human brain hasn't changed. It's just being wired to this new technology. And obviously, if we were to regulate these things or put the brakes on these AI algorithms, you know, drawing our attention, then we could easily revert back to a more, what I hope to be a more refined society, and one that values deep thought and creative ideas, as we used to do 100 years ago or 50 years ago.
Neither of us are psychologists or brain experts, but we can wonder what happens to our minds when scrolling through close-ups of birds or newly seen galaxies trillions of miles away, or all the things that appear. Are we conscious? Do we learn anything? Does this change the way our brains are wired? What do you think about that?
Right, so I think for sure it changes the way our brains are wired, and in any specialty or any job, like be it, I don't know, I spend a lot of time on my computer, so I'm certain my brain is wired to the keyboard in a way, right? So the keyboard has almost become part of, it's like an addition to, an extension of my body, right? And this goes to, you know, be it painters or maybe a musician, a highly accomplished musician that has been playing, let's say, the trumpet for 10 years, that trumpet is almost like an extension of his brain or his body. And it is, you know, it's what research told us. So really the brain will adapt to whatever it is that you're doing consistently, right? So it is for sure true to say that the social media rewires the brain, but in the same way that if you read, you know, 3 hours a day, your brain will be rewired in a different way, right? Now, how does it rewire it, or what happens when we scroll through, you know, as you said, this random assortment of events or videos? So I think, you know, we're almost completely switching off, right? We're just taking in this content without thinking for a second about what it is that we are watching. And then I think what is very important to reflect upon for anyone using these things is, you know, how do you feel afterwards, right? So for instance, when, you know, even if you're reading may seem like a hard for some people, you know, it requires you to obviously concentrate and switch off from anything else. How you feel afterwards, you probably feel very calm, right, after reading for 30 minutes or even watching a movie for 2 hours or any other thing where you put your attention to a single thing for a continuous amount of time. The period afterwards, it's very likely that you will feel very relaxed. But the way one feels after having your brain spin through these 30-second bits of nonsense, it's really not that way, right? You will feel agitated, you will feel more nervous, it's like you will feel stressed, and you haven't really given your brain the rest that we were talking about earlier, right, to self-introspect and to be in a more calm state. What is going on really is that you're taking your brain for a dopamine rush. It's becoming more agitated, more stressed. And as a result of that, afterwards, you will not only feel drained and more stressed, but also you will feel like, as we were discussing earlier, that any other task or going for a walk or any of these tasks that normally would be somewhat pleasurable or perhaps not the most stimulating but at least bearable will feel like the most extremely task at hand, right? So, and I guess in more scientific terms, what is happening is that you're giving your brain this dopamine rush. And the way the brain reacts to that is that it will, or your dopamine receptors will become either less sensitive or you will have less of them to counteract these sudden bursts of dopamine. If you do that over and over every day, at the end of the day, you will rewire your brain to need this overstimulation to feel, or in the same way that a caffeine addict will need a higher dose to feel anything.
I'm interested in what you're talking about here, because if personalized stimulation like TikTok is a drug, if it operates like a drug, and same for scrolling and Twitter, I wonder, does the user require bigger and bigger hits to get the same high? I mean, people do crazy things to get viral hits on YouTube, for example. Some of them are dangerous things to do. Could TikTok fever be a factor that fuels more extreme behaviors in social media and then real life? I mean, perhaps TikTok is shaping extremism, and that could explain a lot of what we're seeing in society and politics today.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, it feels that you need to always take the bar higher, right, in terms of whatever dumb it is that you want to do, especially if you don't have any talent, right? You know, there are all these crazy trends and all these sort of weird behavior that people will engage in just to drive attention. I mean, it is related, but it's not solely the fault of TikTok, I would argue. It's also the fact that we have so much information that it is not enough to just produce high quality content or something that can be really interesting for the audience. You need to somehow get that speaker out and be like, hey, I'm here. And the way to do that, unfortunately, it's becoming more and more doing this extreme nonsensical behavior.
And you say that some of the content is actually void, it's empty, it's contentless. Could you talk to us about that?
I think, or very generally, you can divide the content you see on, you know, these type of platforms that where you are, where the algorithm chooses what you watch, right? Be it TikTok or Instagram. And these people will try to either provide some piece of information, so something that is curiosity, you know, and the usual, why do we XX do this, right? The usual title to grab your attention. And then they will resolve that question, right? They will give you that information. Or it could be even a tutorial, right? How do I take care of the plants in my garden? And there will be a YouTube tutorial for that. At the other end, if you will, we have humor, right? We will have something that is funny. Someone making a joke or some kittens or some stuff like that. But I think it's very interesting nowadays because the content on TikTok is so shallow, there is almost this third category of content that I call a contentless, which is basically content that is nor funny nor informative in any way. It just can be things like, I don't know, people dressing up in some... it's hard to convey this on the phone, but I hope people get a feel of what I'm talking about if they've spent, you know, some time on Instagram or in TikTok. But it's usually this type of content that will fill you, will leave you very void. It will not make you laugh. It will not give you any information. It's purely devoided of any real content.
And people are scrolling, and some are doom scrolling, and they know that time is more than wasted. Some people feel bad about giving up their time in life. They call it brain rot, and yet they still go back. I wonder, is this more like a pornography for the brain?
You could call it pornography. Why not? Although I'm not here to defend pornography, but I would argue pornography has its place. So I would call it junk food for the brain. But in the same way, you could argue that junk food has its place, you know, hopefully small. But yeah, and I think what you're describing is almost the regret someone feels when they develop an unhealthy relationship with drugs, right? Which is this routine where, okay, they would start to have regret feelings and start to ponder, okay, maybe I should quit this, I shouldn't use it, it's bad for me. And then maybe they, you know, they go 2 days without, you know, trying whatever it is they're addicted to. And then the third day they fall again, right? And they feel bad about themselves, then they don't enjoy it anymore. So the type of vocabulary that people use is a clear reflection of the unhealthy relationship they've developed with these algorithms. And what it's telling us is that the mechanisms by which operates are no different than that we associate with drugs.
And what we thought life was about seems to be disintegrating. Maybe a lot of people find wrenching changes all the time, everywhere, too much to face. I know that the last week or two in the United States has been just a tidal wave of strange changes. So people become content to lease out their minds to the media, as millions of people did with TV. What is wrong with that? And is it different this time?
I would say the first problem with that is that people are not really facing, you know, whatever is going on in their environment, but rather escaping from it. And if that worries you, right, you should either, you know, maybe rethink your life or try to do your little action to help. And if you feel things are changing too fast, which they are and they will, you know, maybe it's time to, you know, step up your whatever, your, you know, try to learn what is going on in the world, you know, try to educate yourself. And I think if we turn to TV or social media, and I will now discuss, you know, what I think is different from those two, we're really switching off, right? We're really stopping to think and stopping to think critically. And I think what is really important is that we step up, right? If we think things are unfair out there, or, you know, or we don't like things around us, then I think switching off is not really the solution. And the problem with TV or with social media is that too often this becomes our escape, right? We just turn to these things, we switch off our brains, and then we are seemingly happy, but in reality we've just switched off. And then, you know, you could argue that